Start the tape. Okay, I'll call back to order meeting of the State Government Budget Division for Monday, April 27th, 2009. We were in recess. We still have a quorum from the recess. Senator Latz, the bill we have before us is Senator 93, the single occurrence liability cap for state tort claims removal. And Senator Latz, welcome to the Budget Division.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The bill that you have before you is a response to my experience carrying the 35W bridge collapse legislation, compensation legislation, last year. There was an early and broad consensus that the aggregate cap or per occurrence cap in state law would not fairly allow us to compensate the survivors of the bridge collapse. In state tort law, there are two caps that apply. There's an individual liability cap, which by state law caps the amount of recovery an individual claimant can get, but there's also a cap that applies to the entire event, whether there are five people or 50 people that are injured in a particular event. Existing state law caps the total exposure for the state at now it's $1.2 million. July 1, it'll become $1.5 million. When the bridge collapsed, the number was $1 million. And you can see that that amount, if it had been applied, would have compressed any individual's recovery if it were spread out evenly to about $5,000, nowhere near, you know, fair compensation. So the reason for that cap in state law was primarily to provide for some fiscal predictability and also to not put a government agency in a position of being basically thrown into bankruptcy, being financially incapable of covering that kind of exposure. But the fact is, municipalities with much smaller budgets are far more liable to face that kind of a fiscal crisis. The state, even though, say, $100 million is a large amount of money, that kind of exposure would not cause the state to go bankrupt. And so the rare occurrences of large liability events could still be dealt with from a financial standpoint. And if without a cap, it would be more fair to the victims of a particular event. They would not be arbitrarily suppressed in their recovery because of the number of people that were injured in the same occurrence. They would still be subject to the individual liability cap, so there would in fact be a cap on the total damages or exposure of the state. It would be the number of individuals injured times the individual liability cap, which on July 109 becomes $500,000. So that doesn't mean everyone would get $500,000. They would still have to prove up their damages entitled to recovery, but there would still be that cap. So the bill that you have before you removes the aggregate cap only as it applies to the state of Minnesota, not as it applies to local governments. And there are a number of provisions in here that deal with that, including the findings provision at the beginning, to try to protect against that. There is some concern about an equal protection constitutional challenge to having differences in cap amounts or law relating to the state versus local governments. That has been litigated. I believe it was in Nebraska. I'm seeing heads nodding in the audience. Yes, it was Nebraska. And they found that there was, in fact, a rational basis for drawing that distinction under Nebraska constitutional law. So we're fairly confident that there will be a comparable finding here in Minnesota, although there isn't any specific Supreme Court precedent on that exact point here in Minnesota. But in order to protect against that eventuality, if it were found that this proposed law before you were found unconstitutional, there is in the final provision of the bill, you'll see Section 6, a contingent repealer. That basically says if this law would be declared unconstitutional, then these amendments are repealed And what I have also is an amendment for you to add, a technical amendment suggested by counsel. It's the A7 amendment that would clarify that then the law, as it read before these amendments were adopted, is reenacted. So there would be no gap in the applicable law if this no cap provision was declared unconstitutional, then the current law with an aggregate cap for state liability would be reenacted and effective for whatever incident was involved.
And Senator Lance, what committees was this bill heard in, policy committees before it came to the budget?
Judiciary
Committee heard this bill. Okay. It looks like Mr. Watson apparently drafted this amendment. Mr. Bowden, do you have any further comments on the A7 amendment? Okay. It looks okay. Okay, Senator Olsen moves the A7 amendment. There's discussion on that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed. The A7 amendment is adopted. Senator Lance.
Mr. Chairman, there is also some concern on the part of the local governments that when they act as an agent of the state, which they do, counties frequently do, that they still be subject to the local government cap and not, with this proposed change in law, become exposed to a no-cap aggregate situation. And I acknowledge that concern, and I'd ask, I think it's the A9 amendment.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, we've renumbered it the A11. It now has a July 1st, 2009 effective date.
Okay. We'll have the A11 amendment distributed. And, Mr. Bonner, what does the A11 amendment do here?
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's as Senator Latz described it, basically making it clear that the municipal liability limitations would apply if the municipality is acting as an agent of the state.
Okay. Is there anybody here who wants to be heard on the A11 amendment, since this is an issue that was not heard in the Judiciary Committee? Discussion on the A11 amendment.
Mr. Chairman, for the purpose of the record, this amendment was recommended to me, suggested to me by representatives of the local government organizations, the Association of Minnesota Counties, League of Minnesota Cities, and so on, and they've all looked at it, and so that's they've told me they're comfortable with it.
Okay. If there's no one else to be heard, Senator Pappas moves the A11 amendment. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. The A11 amendment is adopted. Senator Lance, anything further on your bill?
Mr. Chairman, are there, Mr. Bodden, are there, do you have two more amendments in front of you?
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lance, there's one dealing with indemnification and then another one concerning the required insurance coverage for other persons. I've updated copies of both.
Can we take the second one first?
The required insurance coverage?
Yes.
Okay, that's, we have the A8.
Mr. Chairman, while it's being passed out, I can tell you what this amendment was brought to me at the suggestion of organizations that conduct snowmobiling and ATV and bicycle activities on state lands. It's a DNR's practice, and it might well be state law, that requires that these organizations post or prove insurance, that they have insurance coverage for any liability that the state might face were there to be an event, an injury or something, while they were conducting their activities. So even now with the cap, they'd have to post insurance to cover, say, $1.2 million worth of exposure. That's the state's aggregate cap for those events. If the state did not have a cap at all, they would have a very difficult, if not impossible, time covering or providing that kind of insurance to allow them to have their event on state land. So it seemed to me that it was fair to, at least in that narrow instance, to specify a cap so that they could get insurance and it would protect and hold harmless the state, at least up to the point of that capped amount.
So under this amendment, Senator Latz, then if The state requires somebody to have insurance, and then they get it, and then there's an incident, then the limit of liability is what was specified by the state for the policy, so, which might be lower than what the state caps are.
Actually, Mr. Chairman, the limit of liability would be the statutory cap that is in effect for that was in effect before July 1, 2009, which would be the $1.5 million, I believe. Maybe Mr. Bonner can clarify.
Okay, so if there's an incident, then they would look to the insurance. Well, they'd probably look to the state and the insurance company, but the state would probably pull in the insurance policy and say, look to them. I mean, don't sue the state, go after the insurance. So how would this mechanically work?
I believe that would be correct, Mr. Chairman. Okay. They would have insurance to cover it, covered in the amount that is specified, and the state would say, go look at their insurance policy. They have agreed to cover the state's liability under these circumstances.
And if it turns out that the state did tell somebody to get the insurance, but what they didn't do it or they messed up, the state would still be on the hook for it.
Well, yes, Mr. Chairman, but that would be the case now as well. The state is I suppose in that case then the state would be exposed to the full amount without the cap. So it would behoove the state to be even more careful to make sure when they require insurance that, in fact, it's provided and valid before the event occurs.
Cyril Sane.
Senator Latz, this kind of reminds me about something we heard about in the Claims Committee with that bicycle accident. It was on state property and those kinds of things. Is that kind of what this is going after, those kinds of incidences?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olsen, that would... In some ways, I suppose, yes. In that particular case, the state was found by the jury to not have done anything wrong at all. And the sponsors of the event did something wrong. And the individual that specifically caused the accident by parking the vehicle not in compliance with what they'd been taught to do was found liable. And the individual that got injured was found 51%, if I remember, liable for his own injuries. Yes, it happened to have occurred on Giants Ridge, which was, government property. I don't recall if Giants Ridge was a state forest, for example, or if it was a county-operated piece of land. But if it were a state forest, the outdoors folks brought this to me because they sponsor a lot of events on state property, and they were not going to be able to get insurance that the state required them to get if there weren't some reference point for them.
And Sir Les, would this amendment in any way mitigate the impact of the fiscal note? Do you have any idea?
Mr. Chairman, I do not believe it would have any impact on the fiscal note.
Okay. Sarah Olsen moves the A8 amendment.
I have Sarah Jungbaugh. Questions on it yet? Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Latz, I guess I'm troubled by this whole bill in terms of lifting caps and having no limits. But if in fact the limit today is $1.5 million, I can tell you events that are currently that I'm working on that are on state grounds, they're asking in excess of that $1.5 million for the insurance and the different agencies that have control of the state properties get to determine the limits of that insurance. And I think you could well, with this whole bill, eventually have no events being able to be held on state land with not a cap on that. And I have a lot of questions on the whole bill, but in terms of just this, I don't think this will satisfy what you're thinking it will do in terms of limiting the amount of insurance coverage under liability and issues to have an event on state property, because I know that's an issue right now, and it's if maybe Senate Counsel could tell me if that indeed is $1.5 million is what we're supposed to be asking for, because we're putting together some things on the Capitol complex today that they're asking for $2 million and more for insurance from the vendors that will be out here for limits.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Jungbauer, you might want comment from the agencies concerning their policies on what liability limits they ask for. I think it is correct, as Senator Latz said, if you look on page 2, line 16 of the bill, paragraph G there, the stricken language shows pretty clearly the total state limit on the state is $1,500,000. That's the current law.
Well, then, Mr. Chair and Senator Latz, I can tell you that the insurance required is in excess of that for every event I've been involved with that is held on state property. So the limit today, they're already asking for insurance policies that are in excess of that limit.
Mr. Chairman, I can't speak to that. But I do have a question for counsel. As I'm looking at the way this amendment is drafted, the amount is considered, the last two lines, the amount is considered to be the amount applicable under this section before July 1, 2009. That actually would be $1.2 million, because July 1, 2009 is the date that the new aggregate cap would otherwise take effect of $1.5 million. So we might need to tweak that language a little bit. And I don't know if I'd be happy to do that between now and full finance if I get support here to move the bill forward on that. But we might need to tweak that language.
Well, if there's a problem, we should try to fix it now if we can.
On instead of before.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Latz, then you get into some difficulties with the effective date. I need a moment to consider some language to take care of that concern, I think.
Perhaps we could set aside and look at the other amendment. You said it has a different one.
Yes, I do. I have one other amendment.
Yeah, we'll just set the 888 amendment aside and give counsel a chance to think about that issue. So,
has it arrived from Ms. Bonias?
Yep. Yeah.
While that's being handed out, I should let the members know as well. I have with me today Linda Paul, who was one of the most seriously injured survivors of the 35W bridge collapse. She testified in Judiciary and is here in support of this change as a matter of state policy. And if the committee is interested, she's certainly prepared to provide some valuable information for the committee in terms of her own experience. Let's say that she received more in compensation than, far more than she would have qualified for under the existing state cap, as I think everyone who got compensation would have, but it would have affected her most egregiously, as well as the other most seriously injured persons.
Well, Senator Latz, we did have some written testimony provided. I'll leave it up to you what you want to present to us, but let me just note that when I adjourn this meeting, by the time we go back to floor session, I'm done for the year. So we have to finish this bill during this meeting, or your bill's not going to go anywhere.
Mr. Chairman, if
so
you have
how do you want to spend how do you want us to spend our time?
I'd refer the members to the written testimony in your packet. And
okay.
For the what is the number of the amendment?
A-12
amendment that you have before you. There will most likely, I would say probably almost certainly, be a challenge to the constitutionality of this distinction that this bill would draw between state liability laws and municipal or local government liability laws under an equal protection clause. You've seen that we put protections in the language of the bill already. But the municipalities or the local governments have a concern about bearing the financial cost of defending against that constitutional litigation. And I recognize that concern. And so this amendment for indemnification before you proposes for the state to cover their whichever local government becomes the test case, for the state to cover their costs of defense and to cover the costs of any excess judgment, meaning if they end up having to pay anything more than their applicable municipal liability cap, then the state would cover that. That way, the local government is not bearing the cost of this change in the state law. And I think that's the fairest way to approach it. the you know, they have insurance through the, most of the local governments have insurance through their insurance trusts, and typically the Attorney General's office gets involved in constitutional litigation just as a part of their ordinary course of doing business. Whenever a statute's challenged, the plaintiffs are required by statute to notify the Attorney General's office, and the AG's office has the right to get involved. That just happens in the ordinary course of their work. But this would be an attempt to make sure that any costs are borne by the state and not by the local governments because of this change. And I recognize there could be some fiscal aspect to this, and I'm not quite sure how to handle that, Mr. Chairman, except to say that at some point there's going to be some litigation over this. And
I'm not sure if this is an issue that the Judiciary Committee would have preferred to see. Senator Limmer and I are both on that committee, but the rest of the Budget Division members are not. So we are getting into some policy as well as budget issues as well. Senator Jungbauer.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess that was my major concern here. If we're indemnifying the cities and we're pushing something that we know is going to have a constitutional challenge, which I think is ludicrous to even push that forward, what is the fiscal cost of this challenge if we know it's coming? And we do know it's coming. So we need to put that in the fiscal note. I didn't see it anywhere in the fiscal note, so I'm assuming that this amendment was made after the fiscal note was...
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. This issue came up after the fiscal note was presented. The advice from counsel, Ms. Pontius, who was a counsel for Judiciary and so on, was that this law will survive a constitutional challenge. So it's not something that we'd be passing that we know is unconstitutional. But I would anticipate when a claim is large enough, the plaintiff's lawyers would find it worth it to challenge the constitutionality, and we have to anticipate that.
Is there anybody here who wants to be heard on the A-12 amendment?
I will say also for the record, Mr. Chairman, that the local government representatives and I have been working on this, and they are okay with this proposal.
Is there a motion? Senator Olstein moves the A-12 amendment. Discussion on the motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chairman, let's, I think that's all the amendments.
Yes. Mr. Bodden, if you had a chance to review the 11 amendment again.
Mr. Chairman, I think the discussion was on the A, let's see, I believe it was the A8 amendment.
A8, I'm sorry, A8.
This would apply prospectively to the insurance that's required. I don't know if there would be, at this point, the best solution I can think of would be simply to specify the, if the wish is to make it a $1,500,000 limit, just to name that dollar amount. I don't think you have to worry about retroactive concerns. So you could reword the last sentence to read, for purposes of the amount of insurance required for any number of claims arising out of a single occurrence, the amount is $1,500,000. I think that would work, but I didn't staff the Judiciary Committee hearing of the bill. There may be other issues related to that, but...
Sir, last, does that work then?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I think that does work. And then in the event that there are future changes made to the occurrence cap otherwise in law, it would just have to be noted that this particular provision would also have to be adjusted. But it would be consistent then with the other occurrence caps in effect for local government.
So incorporated in the A8 amendment on page 9, after the word is, strike the rest of that sentence and line 10, everything through the period, and insert $1.5 million.
I accept that.
Is that?
Mr. Chair?
Page 1, line 9.
Right. It's, yeah.
You said page 9, but you mean...
Oh, I'm sorry. Page 1, line 9, right. Okay, Senator Olstein incorporates that into the A8 amendment.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Jungbauer.
Should this become law, and I'm hoping it won't, but I'll have a lot of questions and explanations as to why I hope it doesn't. Is there some way, Senate counsel, that we can put in that no agency can require a larger amount of insurance, face value insurance, when an event is hosted on state property, so that there are no arbitrary numbers here, that we can be certain that if this becomes law, that of what the amount is for these events? Because as I say today, it's kind of up to the whoever's running the event, and it is in excess of these amounts that they're requiring.
So you're saying if the agency said, okay, we'll let you have the event, but you've got to post a $3 billion insurance.
Right.
Okay, that's what you're concerned.
What I'd like to see, Mr. Chair and Senate Counsel, is that this 1.5 is the maximum that any agency can charge or can have on a face value of an insurance policy required for an event.
Mr. Bonner, do you have any thoughts?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Jungbauer, I guess it might be a belt and suspenders approach, but you could add on page 1, line 10, after the period, the amount specified in this subdivision represents the limit on the amount of insurance a state agency may require another person to obtain. I'm going to have to take a moment to reword that and make sure we get that correct.
Okay. Mr. Chair?
Sure. Is that all sweet?
Mr. Chair, I'm a little uncomfortable with this right now because two things. If 1.5 is the law now, why are agencies going above that? And two, why are they going above it? Do they feel that there's a higher risk because of the activity that's happening and that falls under their jurisdiction? So I guess I know time is a factor, but it'd be interesting for me to hear from, if it's the DNR, why they would have a higher number than that.
Is there anybody
whatever.
Who can speak to that? Welcome. I see somebody from the DNR here. Welcome to the Budget Division. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ray Bone. I'm not from the DNR, but I am here representing the All-Terrain Vehicle Association of Minnesota and Amateur Riders Motorcycle District 23, and to some degree the snowmobilers, because they were involved in a meeting that we had with Senator Latz. This issue was discussed, I think, several times in front of the Judiciary Committee. And right now, DNR actually has in its rules that the liability insurance that they ask for matches whatever the state caps are. I do not know about the other agencies and how they operate, but I don't know why they would need more than what the caps are at this point. But I know DNR specifically, it's in their rule. It's
well, Mr. Chair, and to Senator Olsen, what we were trying to put together an event for May 14th and 15th on the Capitol grounds here in a biking event, because it's Ride Your Bike to Work Week. Mm-hmm. And all those vendors are required to have a $2 million face value liability limit on the policies.
Mr. Chairman, it might be that they're requiring coverage for more than just the state's liability exposure. But I'm certainly comfortable, if it's the will of the committee, we could add a provision that no state agency may require liability insurance for more than this amount for coverage of potential state exposure, okay. Something to that effect. I'm okay with
that.
Is there any
questions of this witness? Anybody else who wants to be heard on the issue before us here?
Yeah.
We have somebody else coming up forward. Please welcome to the Budget Division. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ryan Church. I'm the Director of the Risk Management Division in the Department of Administration. With respect to this question of insurance, one other alternative would be to include a requirement that the insurance required would be that required by the Commissioner of Administration. As you may know, the Commissioner has responsibility for overseeing all contracts in the state, and as part of that, requires an insurance on the part of vendors or others who would use state premises. And there are cases where the amount is much greater than 1.5. For example, the company that built the new bridge was required to have $100 million of insurance. So depending on the exposure associated with the operation, the commission will make adjustments in those insurance requirements. Currently, the standard insurance requirement for vendors and those using state premises is $2 million. I believe that was increased on January 1st
yep.
of this year, which was in part to reflect the gradual increases in torque caps that have occurred over the last 3 years.
We have another witness. Did you wish to testify as well, too, sir?
My name is Dave Agron. I'm the manager of the property casualty division within the risk management division. I report to Ryan Church.
I see. Okay. Any questions? Sarah Pappas.
Actually, a related issue is I've heard from a constituent of mine, a small business owner that does provide services to the state, that this doubling of the insurance requirement from $1 million to $2 million is really a burden on small businesses and their ability to participate as a vendor. So we've got two, you know, policies. We're trying to encourage the involvement of state business, small businesses, but on the other hand, they can't afford the $2 million insurance policy.
Sarah Robling.
And I wanted to ask about something else, because this came up when we were renting a pavilion for a family reunion in a city, and they required that we get a statement from our homeowner's insurance saying that we had additional liability coverage. And I think ours covered up, I mean, it's routine that homeowner's insurance will cover up to like $500,000, $500,000. And that's what the city was asking for. Fortunately, that's what my insurance covered. So what about private individuals who want to have something at a state park or some family reunion? Do they have to come in with a $2 million insurance coverage? Because I'm sure that would cost quite a bit extra, because that's not the normal amount that the insurance companies usually give.
Mr. Church.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Senator. This is a constant challenge, because we do have small business owners and others who are doing business on state grounds, or families that are doing things on state grounds. The purpose of the insurance requirement is, of course, to transfer the risk from the state to the party involved in that activity. The change gone has and the level required has gone from $1 million to $2 million as of January 1st, and that, again, was designed to respond to the gradual increases in the tort caps, and because it's my understanding that typically those policies are sold in $1 million increments. So buying something between $1 and $2 million would be difficult for someone to actually purchase.
Mr. Chair.
Sarah Limmer.
When was this limitation changed? The last time it was changed. How long ago?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, the change in insurance requirement, the level of insurance requirement, I believe it was January 1st of this year.
The last one was $1 million? What was the cap of that? And now you're coming back for two?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, the original cap was at $1 million. It's currently at 1.2. July 1st, it's scheduled to go 1.5, and the insurance requirement is at $2 million.
Why is it moving up so quickly?
Well, that's a statute that we passed. It's in the statute.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, again, my explanation of that is that for someone to purchase insurance above the $1 million, they're going to buy it in $1 million increments, which is going to require that they purchase a $2 million policy. The cost of that policy, by the way, between 1 and 2, is probably not that much greater than purchasing at the $1 million level. But the insurance limit requirement is a big jump from 1 to $2 million.
Mr. Chair, it does trouble me, because, you know, these are properties that we want people to use, and it seems to me that we may very well be discouraging their use by setting those kinds of insurance requirements on the users. Now, I know we don't have anything yet for an individual to go into a park. They don't, but I hope that doesn't happen. But you know, it just seems odd that if you have an event there, and somebody gets hurt, who could have been there on their own, but just because they came to your reunion, now your insurance is responsible for it instead of if there's, and I don't know what would cause this. I mean, suppose there's a hole that somebody falls into. How do they distinguish who's responsible for this? If it's the state or if it's the person hosting the reunion, I it's just very confusing to me that we have that requirement. Unless it's the host's responsibility and they did something, how do you distinguish?
I can see if you. I don't know, Mr. Church. You have any thoughts on that, or?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. and members of the Acre. Committee, our intent is to try to protect the state's assets. And when we have other parties coming on and using the property, we want to make sure that they are providing financial responsibility for the use of the property. Now, keep in mind, this also applies to vendors and contractors that may be working on this building or other state buildings or, state vehicles, whatever. We've tried to follow along with the increases of the statutory tort cap. And on January 1st, we saw the need to take it from the million up to 2 million to be respective of what the insurance industry typically provides in limits.
Mr. Chair, I came in a little late. Did you give any example of what you have seen that would justify this type of increase?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, we see a number of, we insure all the state automobiles for automobile liability coverage. So our experience is based primarily on what we see. Several years ago, we had state vehicles involved in five fatalities. Now, two of those were within the state of Minnesota, so the tort cap came into play there. We had a crash outside the state of Minnesota in Michigan, and the tort cap did not apply in that case. It came under the laws of Michigan. And for those situations, the Risk Management Division purchases excess coverage to protect the state's liability of the state agencies for the operation of their automobiles outside the state of Minnesota.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Church.
Senator, just to add to that, I think Senator Olstein made the mention of a case that you saw in the Claims Committee where there was a bicyclist on the Giants Ridge property using that property, was severely injured in that situation. That case was adjudicated in court, but then the claimant came to the Claims Committee with questions about the possibility of coming to a different kind of settlement. But there was a case where someone sponsoring that event would have, of course, been required to have insurance, and certainly that's a situation where a very well-intended person wanting to sponsor a wellness activity such as a bicycle race would be doing all of the right things, but if they were left without that coverage and they were sued for those losses, it'd be devastating for them personally. So not only is this a benefit to the state of Minnesota in terms of our being able to transfer that risk, but it's certainly an important thing for a private party to have that coverage in the event that something terribly goes wrong. And so we do have those examples. Those cases do occur.
Mr. Barton, have you had any chance to think about some changes to the 8A8 amendment yet?
Mr. Chairman, on page 1, line 10, after the period, you could insert a new sentence that reads, the amount specified in this subdivision represents the maximum amount of liability insurance that the state may require another person to obtain before authorizing the person to use state premises.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Olstein.
But I'm hearing testimony that maybe we don't want to do that. I think they've made some pretty valid points, like Flatiron having to have $100 million for insurance on rebuilding the 35W bridge and those kinds of things. So, but also because of, you know, lawsuits that the state may end up, or the person sponsoring the event having the higher cap is actually a beneficiary or beneficial for them if there's a severe accident. So I don't know if this is our best course to go.
Well, we've got two issues before us. It was moved to change page 1, line 9 to strike, say the amount is $1.5 million, and just strike the rest of that sentence. And then we had a second issue saying that would be the only amount limited. So maybe we should just deal with those as two separate issues because they probably are. So I think, Senator Olstein, you had moved on page 1, line 9, after the word is, strike the rest of the sentence on 1, 9 and line 10. To insert $1.5 million, so at least we knew that the total amount of insurance required would be $1.5. Is that that's your
correct
motion? Okay. Discussion on that motion. All those in favor,
Mr.
please.
Chair.
Senator Limmer.
On the $1.5 million, is that for the example that Senator Olstein suggested with the Flatiron Construction Company, or for, let's say, a community event that would happen on these premises?
Well, Senator Limmer, we were trying to clarify because it wasn't clear on 1.9 and 1.10 how much we were referring to because the amount has changed. And we thought that we would, instead of just saying it's the amount applicable under the section before July 1st of 2009, if we just said $1.5 million, that would take care of that part. It does not deal with the issue of whether or not you could say that is the you could not require insurance in a greater amount. That's how I understand it. So I figured we would just deal with that part first, $1.5 million, and then deal with the issue as whether or not that should be the limit.
I see.
So Senator Olstein moves on page 1.9 page 1, line 9, striking after the word is, insert 1.5 million, strike the rest of that sentence. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Now we have the issue that's been raised as to whether or not that should be the limit of insurance that can be required by the state.
Mr. Chairman, if we do say that that's the limit and someone can find an insurance policy for 1.5, that would be fine. And if they can't get an insurance policy for 1.5, they had to go to 2 million, so what? You know, they would just have extra insurance. But you wouldn't require them to have more than 1.5. It seems like the 2 million choice was more, you know, well, we've heard it's difficult to get insurance policies between 1 and 2, so we went with 2. You know, maybe they are out there. Maybe they would be available. Who knows?
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Olsen.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Church, would this affect your decision in January 1 that you went to the 2 million? Would you then have to go to 1.5?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olsen, I believe it would. That currently, the Commissioner of Administration, through the Materials Management Division, which is in charge of purchasing and responsible for overseeing all state contracts, currently requires the $2 million insurance level. So my reading of this is that, yes, that what we would need to do is go back and retool those requirements to require no more than $1.5 million.
Mr. Chair,
if I'm reading it correctly,
minimum of 1.5.
A minimum 1.5 million, no more. But you can get 1.5 million. Yes, I know you can. We've done it before. But to answer Senator Olsen's question too, and Mr. Chair, and maybe even Senator Pappas, if we, and this requires so much thought to get it done. But vendors under a certain amount in terms of dollar value or events that are put on that are not with the profit motive, those are the ones specifically we're trying to, you know, when it's a job, you typically the insurance and the caps are commensurate with the cost of the job. I mean, that's always been a gimme in business. So we have too many things at play here to make it simple, mm-hmm. And this is not a simple bill. When you start playing with this particular issue of tort caps or no caps. So, I mean, I'm just kind of putting out there, and I don't know how to do that, I mean, for Senate Council, but if it's not a profit motive or the way to deal with the small vendors, you'd have to put a cap on the, you know, any vendor under a certain amount of business with the state of Minnesota or something.
Mr. Chair.
It's just, it's a lot of hard work for small business owners, and it's very difficult to put on an event that has no profit motive when you start requiring insurance.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Jungbauer brings up a good discussion point, and the point is, I don't know if this discussion has taken place in our insurance committee or not. Might be better suited for that. I can think of a group that might be a family reunion, and they want to use the neighborhood park because they live in a condo. And they don't have any room in their own residence. And so they want to have the 20 people down at the park and roast their food. Are they required to take out this extra insurance? Or let's say you had a fireworks display and the guy who wants to sell the glow-in-the-dark sticks that all the kids buy. Does that one little vendor have to buy a $1.5 million coverage for his participation in that public event? Or in the case of a Flatiron Corporation that's going to have a $150 million construction project, they're required to have general liability insurance. I don't know if this insurance is above and beyond what they would pay just as a corporate contractor, but this kind of looks like kind of a one minimal size will fit all, and I'm not sure if we're all qualified. I'm not qualified to figure this out myself. And so I don't know how we resolve this. Or maybe the state would be responsible for up to a specific amount if it's just a private citizen gathering of family down at the local park to roast some hot dogs. I don't, you know, up to a general liability limit. And then if it turned if it was something much larger or of a profit-oriented venture or perhaps a large nonprofit event that's taking place, whatever those running things that I have an aversion to, but
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Limber, I wonder if a lot of times those pavilion events charge $50 or $100 or something.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's supposed to be to cover the insurance.
Yeah.
No, they want that certificate of insurance with it.
I've never heard of that.
Mr. Chair.
Sarah Lassine.
Clearly, this is a can of worms we've uncovered. How do we move the bill forward? Is there another committee stop for it?
Well, the Finance Committee is obviously the bill is in the Finance Committee, and it would go from the Finance Committee to the floor. Some of the things we've been talking about on the other amendments, frankly, are policy issues within other jurisdictions. Certainly the Judiciary Committee, possibly the Commerce Committee, although I don't think so. I think Judiciary Committee would have most of the interest in the things we've been talking about here. So, but here's where the bill is at right now, and I've got we've got the choice of moving it ahead or having the bill go back to Judiciary Committee, which basically kills the bill for the rest of the year.
With Mr. Chair, with that, what you've just stated, maybe what we should do is put this $2 million in afterwards, and then if it has to be adjusted in the Finance Committee, that may be possible. But I want to see the bill move forward, Senator Latz. But I think we have stumbled on something bigger than we anticipated with this.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Latz.
You stumbled onto something bigger than this bill, Mr. Chairman. Frankly, a lot of your discussion is beyond what I'm attempting to accomplish with this bill and the scope of this bill. I was attempting to address the concerns of some of the outdoors groups, specifically that sponsor events in the state
parks. You opened the door.
If that's going to cause the bill not to be able to move forward, I just assume not have that provision in the bill, and I would pledge to work through other vehicles or perhaps a different bill next year to try to clear that up.
Way
to limit it just to that narrow category that I was attempting to address without opening the door to broader questions.
Mr. Chairman, so Senator Latz, are you saying that the A8 amendment is not needed?
Mr. Chairman, it's not needed for the main purpose of the bill to be accomplished. That's correct. Some of the outdoors groups will be a bit concerned about insurance requirements when there isn't a specific amount that's listed for state liability. But I suspect that the Department of Administration can work with that in terms of what they anticipate exposure might be and set insurance limits that can be.
Well, why don't we set the AA amendment aside for a moment?
Yeah.
Let's actually talk about the fiscal note because that's the reason why we're here. And how are we going to deal with the fiscal note? So, Lass, if you had any thoughts on that, because there are some significant impacts to the state budget in paying for this if we raise the liability caps. And I'm not quite sure. This, Mr. Lundin, these would be out of the general fund. Is that correct?
Some of the expenses are from the general fund. It's the trunk highway fund and then also the risk management internal service fund.
And let me ask the Department of Administration, these would be costed into the state by listing the caps. Is that what would happen? Mr. Akram, these would be increased cost to the state. Is that what would happen if this bill would pass with this fiscal note?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, yes, we, as we set our insurance policy limits, we've matched the tort cap. So our fiscal note is reflective of what we think we need to do to protect those agencies, and that would be to protect purchase some excess coverage on top of the tort cap. Our policies have always followed the tort cap, and we intend to do that even if the occurrence limit goes away. We feel we're capable of doing the $500,000 per person and $1,500,000 per occurrence limit. But above that, we would want to buy some excess coverage for the state agencies for something that would happen inside the state of Minnesota.
Okay. So, item
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Pappas.
So, Mr. Chairman, the cost then is spread over three different funds, correct? The Trunk Highway Fund, the Risk Management Fund, and then there is a cost to the general fund the AG's office and Minnesota Management and Budget. Am I reading that correctly?
Yeah, the AG's office, I mean, they've got a cost they have in here, but the major funds look like it's going to be to the looks like Minnesota Management and Budget. That's the main one, isn't it? The Risk Management Fund obviously has the $1 billion here that you can see it for revenues. So,
Mr. Chairman.
Yep, Senator Latz.
The fiscal note kind of made a projection based on some incidents that have occurred in the past as to what the potential exposure might look like in the future. And so they selected an incident with a number of claimants at 7 and then determined how to assign the resulting potential liability if each of the 7 claimants were able to establish damages to recover their individual capped amount of $500,000. If it were an auto case or a case involving a state highway that would apply to the Trunk Highway Fund, then that cost gets borne by the Trunk Highway Fund. They took some proportions and divided up what they thought would be Trunk Highway Fund versus State General Fund, and that's how you ended up with $781,000, for example, on the FY10 line under the Trunk Highway Fund number, and the $208,000 to the General Fund for Minnesota Management and Budget. What incident might happen in the future, and how many might be injured, and how seriously those injuries or if there was a death might be, it's really speculative, and you can see how few incidents there have actually been in the past. There just aren't very many times when this happens. When it does happen, of course, it's significant for the people that are involved.
Well, and of course, if you've noticed, Senator Latz, the thing that prompted you to bring forth this legislation was the 35W bridge collapse, which showed that the capping the limits of liability could have caused an inequity for the people involved, but for the fact that the legislature passed special legislation to deal with that. Senator Robley?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, I guess we really don't know what the fiscal note could be. It could be huge, and it could be next to nothing. But I think by taking the caps off, we are potentially incurring a huge liability. And so this fiscal note could be meaningless because it could be, 100 times greater than this if we just simply lift the caps. And I don't know, and Senator Latz, you did a great job of bringing that 35W compensation fund through the process and having a good system of set up so that victims could be compensated beyond the $1 million cap. But I didn't see any problem of doing that and bringing it through the legislature. When you have something unusual like that happens, I think that's the appropriate way to do it. It was something that we all then got to know about and find out about, and I think that, in general, the taxpayers thought that was an appropriate way to deal with it. But just to take the caps off completely gives me a really high level of discomfort because it really is an unknown factor of what that could result in. And I just can't support this as it is. I just feel really uncomfortable. And I think, some of these bigger incidents can and should be dealt with individually by the legislature if that's appropriate. And I think, it comes to our attention. We all have constituents who would come and bring things to our attention if the need arose. And it may not be very often, and that's good. We hope that it isn't. But I think it's something that we can take the time to deal with when it does occur.
Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Latz, and just piggybacking off what Senator Roebling said, if indeed you made a great case that these incidents are very rare, and if they're very rare, that's exactly why they should be brought to the legislature, and the legislature should react. Just the potential, you can argue exactly that the fiscal note could be lower, but again, like Senator Roebling said, it could be extremely more than that. We just don't know what tomorrow holds. So if these events are rare, I don't think this is necessary legislation. We bring other things just like you do with the 35W before us. And certainly in a time of the economic and fiscal problems we're having today, we can't afford to take the fiscal crapshoot that this might cause us in terms of cost to the state right now.
Just as somebody who served on the Judiciary Committee for quite a long time, and so has Senator Limmer, the issue has come up in the past a couple of times. In fact, Senator Cohen had a constituent who, an elderly woman who was in his district, was hit by a bus, and they felt, and she was killed, and there were some concerns that the liability limits were too low, and we've adjusted them. As I recall, the testimony over the years was most of the concerns came from the local governments, who felt that if we raise the caps too high, it would be cost prohibitive to them. There seemed to be less concern for doing it for the state caps, but nobody was thinking in terms of something on the magnitude of a 35W bridge collapse either. I mean, that we never talked about that. So you're right. It could be nothing. It could be great. And we don't know.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Lapps, yeah.
I recognize, the concerns that Senators Jungbauer and Roebling have raised. And fortunately, it is exceedingly rare in the United States to have, a liability event of the magnitude of the bridge collapse. The far more likely kind of event that you're talking about is seven people injured in a state van or killed in a state van. Whether or not the legislature wants to be involved in every time one of those incidents occurs, where the exposure may be $3.5 million, and whether we want to make those judgments is a whole other question. I, for one, don't think that the legislature ought to be involved in making the kind of judgments that we made in the bridge collapse every time there's a state van or an auto accident where the state faces liability exposure, in determining how much should be paid, whose claim is valid, and to what extent, those kind of things. I don't think the legislature is well suited for those kind of decisions on a regular basis. We can also recall, even with the 35W bridge collapse, the $36.325 million or whatever the exact amount was that was set aside for specifically for compensation for the survivors of the 35W bridge collapse, that number was that arrived at, frankly, mostly based upon the budget negotiations and the amount of money that the legislature determined could possibly be available and that wouldn't, would cover what we thought were some of the needs but would fit within the budget parameters. And, I'm not sure that we want to be making those kind of judgments either when there are particular liability events. I mean, if we had simply taken the amount of provable damages for each victim and multiply and added that all up, there wouldn't have been any rhyme or reason to the $36.325 or the $38 million, which covered, Wade House and the administrative costs. I mean, $38 million was a number that the budget conferees on the bill could agree with in consultation with the budget committees or the chairs from each House and Senate. I mean, that's...
And I also served on that conference committee, too. And, I mean, I don't know what the number would be like if we had to deal with something like that this year, as opposed to, say, 10 years ago when we had budget surpluses. I don't know. Senator Pappas.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm nervous about taking the cap off, but there is still a limit of $500,000 per person in law, correct? So I do think
yes.
that does provide a different kind of limit, and that's probably adequate. So I'm going to support the bill.
And I would note, too, that, although the Judiciary Committee did see the bill and approve it, they didn't have the fiscal note, and it's our purview to obviously look at the bill through the fiscal note issues. Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, Senator Latz, I guess when you go back to the seven people in the van, then I don't think it's appropriate that the state has something different in terms of their potential liability than every other citizen or company doing business in the state of Minnesota. So, again, we don't operate out of the reality of a no cap or no limit on our insurance, although people can obviously come back and try to sue us for more than our insurance policies and things like that. So I find it very troubling to remove the caps. And then I guess my other heartburn is Section 1 findings. You mentioned consensus, and the word consensus always bothers me because that means typically lack of evidence. So people got together in a room and said, we think this is a good idea. So is there any studies that would back up that the what we're saying here, that the legislature finds, who in the legislature found that, that we have the ability to absorb the cost and pay for multiple tort claims arising out of a single dollar occurrence without a dollar limitation? Is there actual documented study on that, or is this?
Well, if there's anybody, a critic around here, finding, it's me. I don't like findings or purpose statements. Occasionally, we do have them. And sometimes you put findings in, not because the legislature finds anything, because we don't. But I think it's fair to say that when you get something like this, there's going to be litigation at some point down the road. And occasionally you do have to have explanations, you know, in bills to kind of say just what it was for, not just because we think it's a good idea, but realizing that findings are probably going to be part of, you know, some court's review of whatever we do here. But that's one of the reasons why, in this case, I didn't move to remove it in Judiciary Committee. But, you know, I mean, it's certainly at any stage of the game, we can, you know, that's a fair question. Senator Latz, did you have any thoughts on that as well, too?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would agree with you as to the purpose behind the findings here. And they were drafted very carefully by counsel for that reason. But I think it's fair to say that in a $34 billion budget, even a $100 million judgment against the state is not something that's going to cause the state to have to go bankrupt or anything like that. And so that would be the basis for saying the state has the fiscal capacity, where, say, a city would not have the same level of fiscal capacity, or even the largest county in Minnesota has a far smaller budget than the state has. So that would be the basis for that assertion. But, you know, with regard to your earlier comment about, you know, the businesses being on the same footing as the state, you know, businesses are not liable only to the point of their insurance coverage. They're liable to the full extent of provable damages. Their insurance will pay for up to the amount of the insurance coverage, but if there's a judgment in excess of that insurance policy limit, the business is still responsible for paying the excess judgment.
And I did state that.
Yeah. Can I ask, is there anybody else who's here who wanted to be heard on the fiscal aspects of this bill? Not necessarily the policy, but the fiscal part that we've been talking about. I just want to make sure anybody who came is not shut out on this one. Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chair, we've had representatives from agencies here regarding this bill. Are you gentlemen that are leaving now, are you speaking on behalf of the governor's administration?
They're part of the Department of Administration, right, the risk management folks.
Where's the governor on this bill?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I'm not clear on the governor's office taking any position on this. We've really focused. Our narrow interest has been on the risk management fund, which is the fund that, of course, provides the solid insurance programs for the state, and the fiscal impact on that fund. I will just say that the fiscal impact with respect to the risk management fund just hits agencies that pay the policies, that purchase the policies from us. The impact on the risk management fund would have no impact on the general fund directly or any of those other things. It's really strictly what agencies would pay us for the policies that they purchase. But I'm not aware of the governor's office position to get to your question directly. I'm sorry.
Well, I'll just tell you my thoughts. I think that if the bill does move forward, it's going to generate a broader discussion. I think I'm a co-author of the bill because I support, you know, the concept, and I was part of the 35W Bridge Conference Committee, but if it's going to move, I would think it'd be more appropriate to send it without recommendation because of the fiscal note and because of the broader issues here. But that's just where I'm thinking at the moment.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rust.
That would be my motion.
Okay. Senator Rust moves that Senate File 93 be forwarded to the Finance Committee without recommendation. So discussion on the motion. Senator Olsen.
Mr. Chair. We have not done anything then with that A8 amendment.
The A8 amendment has not been adopted.
We had just adopted the 1.5
But
well, actually, we amended the A8 amendment, but we didn't adopt the A8 amendment, so that's not part of the motion here. If somebody wanted to move that, that would be a higher motion. But we've adopted the A7, 11, and 12 amendments.
Mr. Chair, if I could yield to Senator, or ask Senator Latz what he felt about that.
Senator Latz, on the A8 amendment, did you want to revisit that?
Mr. Chairman, I sense some concern with some broader issues that have been raised, and I recognize those concerns. I'm a bit uncomfortable with the impact on the outdoors groups that have explained that to me, but I am perfectly willing to try to work with them to come up with perhaps a more narrowly drafted amendment that might protect their concerns without having the broader impact that have been raised about other uses of state facilities. At this time, I think I'd prefer that the bill move forward without the A8 amendment, and I'll plan on trying to work out that issue either through this bill or through some other bill a different year.
Discussion on the motion by Senator Rest that to recommend that the Senate File 93 be forwarded to the Finance Committee without recommendation.
As amended.
As amended, yes. Further discussion on that motion. Anybody else want to be heard? On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. Thank you, members. I don't think I'm going to